This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 is out now on Exactly Right. New episodes on Mondays. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Babs Gray, and you know how fancy lotion says apply to face and neck? I have to admit something. I don't apply to neck.
Spooky.
I'm sorry for my dry neck, everybody! spooky intro.
So spooky. I'm Brandi Posey, and just think about this. A crab with a big floppy hat and hangy boobs and a walker. And his name is Old Bay. B-A-E. Someone do something with that. I don't know.
I'm Tess Barker, and I remain, as usual, thrilled that I didn't attempt Sober October.
And this is Lady to Lady.
Can you keep a secret?
Neither can we.
Hello! We got Barbara, Brandi, and of course, Big Tess. We got a show for everyone that's the fucking best. Come on, baby, it's time to hang out. Your favorite ladies, ladies and ladies.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I did see like a romantic comedy called Can You Keep a Secret recently, and I was like, they stole our tagline.
We have to capitalize on that. I think we should collab. Yeah. Let's
I was gonna say let's sue them, but also okay. Collab might be a good idea.
I'm going to look it up right now. Let's get to the bottom.
I mean, it looks like garbage, but let's bring out our guest. She has a new book coming out called Dark Archives, A Librarian's Investigation into the Science and History of Books Bound in Human Skin. Ooh. Megan Rosenblum, welcome to the show.
Hi, ladies. Thank you for having me.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on. This book comes out on October 20th, so in perfect time for Halloween. I'm guessing that was on purpose.
Yes. I was like, can we do it September maybe? Like, we could do it like a little earlier. They're like, absolutely not.
No, like, we're getting in on not. That Halloween
it's,
buying season.
It's
well, if you have
season.
Halloween content, like, shoot them while you got them, right? I mean,
yeah.
This is the time.
Just so everyone listening knows, Megan is also talking into a skull instead of a microphone. So that's where we're getting her recording from.
What, you guys don't?
Yeah, I mean, I do, actually.
Brandi has lots of skulls. She doesn't speak into all of them, though. At least not that I know of, but maybe.
No, I like whisper into their ears, but I don't talk into them as a recording device.
Right.
Not yet. Right, hey, right. Quarantine's still early.
Is it? You think it's early?
Yeah.
Oh no. Fuck.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Unfortunately, perhaps.
Maybe. Unfortunately, perhaps.
Yeah.
That seems fair. That seems fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we might be at like the halfway point potentially in an optimistic way.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's not fun to talk about. Megan, how are you?
Yeah, my work already said we're definitely not going back until at the earliest March.
Gotcha.
So
yeah, that tracks.
It's weird because I started this job. I worked at the same place at University of Southern California for like, you know, the entire time I've been in LA, like 11 years. Mm-hmm. And then I left there and started at UCLA during pandemic.
Oh,
like,
wow.
In July. So I literally like shut off one Zoom and turned on another one.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
And, like, sitting in the same spot. It's
that's
like
weird,
so weird.
Because usually when you start a new job, it's like, yeah, a little, you know, pomp and circumstance. You get your first day of work like
outfit.
Clothes. Now it's just like, all right, new Zoom.
Yeah.
Oh God, the final interview for that was like so brutal because it was still like 8 hours long, but it was on Zoom. And so I was just sitting here, like, my eyes are crossing, and I'm trying to meet people and, like, look at the gallery of the little people and, like, hi. It was so man. Weird. But apparently I did okay because I got the job. That's awesome. So that's the important part. Yeah.
You were working with, like, rare books over at USC. Is that what you're doing over at UCLA now, too?
At USC, I was, like, mostly, so I love the rare books, and that's always been my thing, but I've never had, like, only rare books or anything like that. It was always just something I sort of forcibly included into my job.
Nice.
It's just like, oh, no, I do this, though. I do the rare books, too. So it was mostly, you know, medical library stuff at USC. And now at UCLA, I'm a collection strategies librarian, which sounds like super
fancy. Ooh, what does that
fancy.
Mean? Yeah, what is...
I know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still kind of figuring it out, to be honest.
You're like Indiana Jones for books. You're like, it belongs in my museum.
Yeah, basically.
That's a library. It's a library. A museum of books is a library.
Yeah, there's... so it's basically like... you know, we have millions and millions of books and other things at the library. And there's like 100 librarians that work at UCLA, yeah. Maybe more. It's like so big. So there are all these different areas and the collections, like you have to kind of look at them across like really broad things. Like how do we have an anti-racist collection? Mm-hmm. How do we do open access stuff and whatever? So I get to scratch my chin and like be real thinky, come up with big ideas and try to make them happen like across the whole thing. So it's a brand new position though. So it's really, I'm figuring it out, but I'm figuring it out like without being able to pop into someone's office, be like, hey, how do you do this?
I know. Because it's like, what is it like? I mean, working for a library during COVID, I just can't imagine.
Yeah. Cause it seems like you deal primarily with like the physical collection, right?
Yeah. Are you shushing people in your home around you while you're working?
All the time. I do have a 3-year-old.
So yes.
Yeah. Wait, can we hear your librarian shush?
It's more like a shh.
Perfect. Like a great. Shh. Awesome.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Like, great.
It needs to have a little bit of anger to it, like a exasperation. Mm-hmm. You can't just go full like shh.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have to.
Well, because then you're like taking up, you know,
you're making
quality
noise too.
Sound time
quality
if
silence.
You're making it too long. Yeah.
Right. And like if I were physically there and had to do it in a mask or something, it would really just backfire. Like it's just like your own breath in your face or something. Yeah. Just need like the little bit of shush. I did seriously though, like I think it was my first week of work ever as a librarian. I actually did shush another librarian.
Oh, shit.
It was like a very auspicious beginning. But there's the staff room and you may or may not know this about librarians, but they're loud as hell.
Yeah. I do.
They really are.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of librarians tend to have like very distinctive laughs that are really loud.
Should I have been a librarian?
No.
Okay. I think this could be. Yeah, I think this could be another life for Tess. For
I mean,
sure.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I mean, actually,
I think most librarians are pretty like fucking cool, right?
Yeah.
Librarians like to party generally.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
Yeah, we like to tell stories. We like to know things and tell people stuff and whatever. And it really, you know, librarianship is really just like kind of it's customer service basically. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with people and trying to get them the stuff that they want, even, you know, whether it's, you know, a kid at a public library or some researcher who needs, you know, text data mining and stuff like that. Like you kind of do all of it depending on where you're at.
You have to have such a broad kind of understanding. You sort of have to have like a survey of everything, right? Like you have to have some understanding of like virtually every subject matter, I imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that sort of drew me to it, because before I was a librarian, I was a journalist, and it's kind of the same, right?
Makes
where
sense.
It's sort of like you know just enough about stuff to be like dangerous, right? And you know just enough about everything, and then but it's like pointing people to the information that they need, like, and learning new things every day because you have to learn the thing to help them get the thing. Mm-hmm. And so I just that's what I love about being a librarian, because it's really I just wanted to basically be a student that got paid to be one.
Awesome.
Yeah, it kind of seems and like living the dream in some way. Like, I have some friends who've remained in education sort of in that way and have just gotten, like, multiple, you know, they're getting to the point where they're paid to be in school, basically, by the universities they teach at. And I'm like, that sounds actually, like, really fun to just never have to leave college.
Yeah. And I get to go to other, I get to go to other libraries, or back when we could go places, you know. Yeah. So, like, in the book, I travel all over the place to different libraries and museums to see these books, and I get to talk to the other librarians there, and you know, there's a lot of like different personalities. People have really different reactions to the idea of them having a book that is bound in human skin, and also then when we do a scientific test on it, like how to like once they find out whether it's real or not, and what their reactions is, they're pretty across the board, you know. So yeah, it's, and the book too is like just about as like interdisciplinary as you can get, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just got like book history and proteomics, like science, and it's got history from 200 years across like multiple countries and blah, blah, blah. So no like actual historian who studied like a very narrow thing in their right mind would ever like do a book like this. Yeah. You have to be like a nosy librarian to write something like that, you know.
Was this an idea that like you had, and then you, or was it something that like somebody approached you and it's like, you look like you know about human skin books?
Yeah, it's like, we have an opening for human skin book lady.
Yeah.
Would you like to be that? Yeah, it's you know, I was researching like another idea. Mm-hmm. And while I was traveling around doing some research in different libraries, I would just, because I had heard of these books, the first place I saw them was in the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia.
Shout out.
And they have the largest now like confirmed collection in the world. And I thought, oh, this is a Mutter thing, just like all the other weird stuff at the Mutter Museum, which is like a 19th century sort of pathology museum, mm-hmm. like weird presentations of different diseases and bodies and stuff. Like they have a colon that's like the size of a car.
Ooh,
you know, I mean, that kind of
it's
thing.
It's awesome. I love that. That was like one of my favorite places when I lived
like
in Philadelphia.
Is it like a real plasticized colon?
Yeah, it's like somehow they preserved it where it's all extended, mm-hmm. so you can really like see it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's in a glass case, and you just, you can do the 360 walk around the the colon. You know, they have all sorts of wild diseases. It was like the original idea was like teaching doctors like how to deal what these diseases or, you know, sort of congenital things would look like if you never saw them in person because they're so rare, right?
Yeah.
So that was the idea, but now it's open to the public and people walk around and look at them and learn things. And so, yeah, it was like there that I saw them for the first time. And, you know, it's just a bunch of books with their covers closed and they just look like normal books. But then I read it and said that they were bound in human skin by doctors, and I'm like looking around like, is anyone seeing that? Like, this is not okay. Like why is this? It's like all the other stuff that's in the room, and I'm like completely like freaked out by this little, you know, by these little brown books that look like anything else. And I think that's actually what's so spooky about them.
Yeah.
And then yeah, as I was traveling around, I'd just be like, do you have like, you know, while I'm here doing research, do you happen to have any books bound in human skin? I don't know, just asking.
That's an amazing email. That's a very like African Prince email to send, like, hey librarian, do you have any books bound in human skin?
Please send me a money order for
y'all should see my inbox. It is
oh my
a
god
lot.
I bet I hope I you imagine. Have like a separate inbox that you can like just anonymously have non-skin related correspondence
now. Yeah, people are scared because I have like 20,000 unread emails, but none of them are about human skin books. Okay, so that's,
well,
that's spooky.
That's what you
they're
think
unread, Barbara. You don't know,
you haven't read them. True. You don't know. You could have at
now
least
you
five.
Didn't buy, now, your book is not bound in human skin, correct?
Correct, okay, yeah. Okay, I think that's a little too rich for the publisher. Yeah, it's kind of expensive source material.
Show it. Yeah. You actually got it today. Show Brandy and Tess. It's a beautiful book, the cover.
I did. It showed up last night.
Yeah.
Got it. It's really that beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
See how it looks like a plant,
yeah,
but then it has body parts in it.
Whoa.
Like a heart and an eyeball and
yeah.
And then I really like the side
too. Wow.
This is my first time seeing the side.
It's gorgeous.
Do you see
that's
it?
Gorgeous art.
This is like an arm bone.
Oh, cool.
On either side of the title.
Wow.
Stuff. It's super cool.
That is so beautiful. So. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm so excited. It's like a real thing. I worked on this for 5 years.
Wow.
So
yeah,
it's just like wild that it exists now. And I kind of didn't know even how to react. I was like looking at this. I'm like, what are you? You're in my house now. You're like a thing. It's not that different from having a baby on a certain level where it's like you weren't in this house before. And now you are.
I can see that. Yeah.
It's your baby. You
longer,
made it.
A longer gestation period, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I sold the book. So I worked on the proposal for like almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I sold the book while I was 6 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
So I was running around New York having the literal best day of my life where people were like everyone in cool glasses at the different like publishing houses are just literally handing me piles of books. And I'm like, ah, free books, la, 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 like best day ever. You know, it was so great. But like, yeah, I was running around like meeting with all these editors and whatever. And then I thought, oh, yeah, you know, I'll take a little time for maternity leave, you know, work, and then I'll get back to work on the book and it'll be done in like a year or whatever. And here we are. And it's so much. My kid is now almost four, but it's finally out.
It's just crazy. Yeah. How long it takes
everything.
To make a thing.
Yeah. People have no idea. Cause you're seeing the final product, which has all the, labor removed from it for your viewing pleasure.
Yeah. And you know, it's like kind of fun too, because I'm such a book geek. I mean, you know, just about as geeky as you can get. Every part of the process was actually super fun for me, but I also made it way too much work. Like, oh, I'm giving this index of a once over.
Yeah. You
know? Oh, we're looking at this index hard.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great though. So like, tell us some of your, I don't know, your favorite, you know, findings and moments. Like, I'm sure it was a long, obviously, like you said, a long journey from when you decided to do the book to kind of throughout your travels and finding it. And what were there people at certain libraries that didn't know that they had books like in human skin?
Well, a lot of times these books were the only way you would know that a book was maybe bound in human skin is that somebody wrote inside bound in human skin in a pencil. That
Whoa.
Was pretty much it. Who wrote it? At what point? Was that person telling the truth? If they lied, is there a reason for the lie? You know, and that was just the only way people would know. So, you know, imagine you've got millions of books, right? Mm-hmm. And it is totally possible that you would not notice at some point that there someone had like written something inside.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of other things to deal with. So whatever. I know with the Hay Library at Brown University, they have like the second biggest collection, and theirs is really super interesting. But when I think they knew they had maybe two or three alleged books, alleged human skin books, and then they were getting through their cataloging backlog and found like more.
Whoa.
And so they were like, you know, doing all the rare book cataloging where you're, you know, collating and doing all this super like detail work. And it's like, oh, there's a handwritten note in here that says it's bound in human skin. Didn't know that. And didn't know it was sitting there on the cart. Just
for anyone
being
to
a human
up.
Skin book.
Wow, that's crazy.
Do you have any idea like what the reasons for why like it's not Dr. Seuss books. Like what are these books that like what is the content of the books themselves? That like what are the reasons why these books are being done this way?
Yeah, there's so most of them were made at some point by a doctor, right? Or a doctor was involved in the creation of it because the doctors, 19th century doctors doing, you know, dissections and stuff, mm-hmm. that's where they would be able to get a piece of skin to bind a book.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of, like, say, alleged human skin books that are occult books, like spell books mm-hmm. and stuff. And everyone we've tested so far has been fake.
Mm. Oh,
but you
wow.
could see why,
of
like,
course,
people,
yeah.
why it would add, like, monetary value to mm-hmm. a book. If you're like, oh, here's my here's my, you know, book of like spells. Also, it's bound in human skin. That would be appealing to a certain kind of like occult book collector.
Yeah.
But the real ones are like, they kind of run the gamut. A lot of them are a doctor bibliophile's like favorite book, like one of his anatomy books, that maybe one that he wrote himself, or one that was the oldest best book in his collection that he got rebound in human skin to make it more like special and rare. There's a lot of those. There are others that are kind of philosophical, like, you know, ruminations on the soul kind of things. Mm-hmm. People, you know, thinking that that's cool to do for some reason. You know, yeah. I mean, some of them are like that were fake too. Then there's this whole other group of books, which we have not tested yet. So I just want to be like very clear that we don't know that they're real, but there's good reason to believe that they may be, which is there's these books in like England and Scotland where in the 19th century, you could execute people for practically no reason, right?
Yeah,
like you'd be right. Like, oh, you're behind on your bills, like you get executed, whatever. But then, and they were really like learning a lot about anatomy, and they had this like the schools needed bodies and stuff like that. So there was like just rampant grave robbing, all sorts of crazy stuff going on by medical students at the time, and a lot of people, unless you mm-hmm. study history of medicine, you wouldn't like know that that existed. But so in order to make, if you actually did murder someone, and in order to extra special punish you, they did like a million things to your dead body. Mm. Like they were like, let's get in the phrenologist. Let's get in the like death mass. Let's mm-hmm. make him in like take a skeleton and put it up in the, you know, in the hospital, and let's do all these things to him. And then, oh, well, also take a transcript of his trial and bind it in his skin.
Damn.
Whoa. As like an extra punishment. Yeah. So that's crazy because those were like obviously punitive. Like we are doing this to punish you, to show people that they shouldn't murder people. Basically.
And then who would have ownership of that transcript? And like, were there any, are there currently any like legal battles over like any of these pieces?
Well, the law is really fascinating. And this was like one of those things where, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I have a friend who literally wrote the book called The Law of Human Remains. And you better believe I called her up and was like, all right, walk me through this.
Yeah.
Like, how does this work? And so it really depends on where you are, to a ridiculous degree. Mm. Like in England and even more so in Scotland, they have certain rules around what is a human remain. Like, hair, fingernails, not human remain. Like, blood is a human remain. Mm. Like, they have, like, all these rules about what is, like, what would be considered a body, basically. Mm-hmm. But then also, if it's made from human remains, but then it becomes an artifact through application of skill, like a shrunken head, then it is an artifact and not a human remain. And there are like all these crazy rules, and they're all different. And in France, they're like super duper strict, which is why I get a bunch of French like private collectors in my email who are like, hey, I want to get my book tested because, it's technically illegal for them to even have one. Mm. In France, where the buying and selling thing is like a different, can you buy or sell human remains? In America, there's only one federal law that covers like dead bodies, and it's called NAGPRA, and it's only about Native American like human remains. So all the rest of them are state-based, and they all have to do with like basically the idea of, is this desecration of a corpse? And they're like, what is desecration of a corpse? It's community standards, but at different points in time and different communities, you know, cremation was desecration of a corpse. Mm. Right? So it's almost like it's weird, but it's complaint based.
Mm.
So if someone was like, I want to make a human skin book, and then someone finds out you did it, then complains about it, then they would have to like put you on trial to decide whether it actually is like desecration of a corpse or not. Someone would have to like decide Whoa. That and then it would be on the books, but no one's ever done it, so people don't really know.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
So like there's nothing wrong about having one in a collection or anything like that. You know, they get to the collection, but people usually donate them or whatever. And then, but the thing that really kind of interested me about, I mean, there's a lot of things that are interesting about them, I think, but one of them was like, they had this new test where we could take a sample of the binding and find out for good whether it was an animal or a human. Mm-hmm. And no one had ever been able to tell that before. So all that whole time where you just had notes in a book, and then for us to be able to be like, okay, these 18 books that we found are real, definite human skin, and these other 13 said they were, but they're not. And so the being able to learn something really new from something that's been in a library collection mm-hmm. for, you know, hundreds of years, this is kind of amazing.
Yeah. Could you, like, get DNA off of a human skin book and put it in 23andMe and be like, hey, here's your old uncle. He's a textbook.
So the ancient, like the world of ancient DNA, mm-hmm. like is changing super fast all the time. So it's getting like better and better and better all the time. So even in a couple of years, who knows what could happen? But in general, it doesn't work. DNA doesn't work on human skin leather because DNA degrades super fast after you die, unless it's kept in certain conditions. But then also, if the more like messed up chemical processes you do to it, the quicker it degrades. So like turning a skin into leather is like,
yeah,
really super, like it just like destroys the DNA pretty quickly. And then also it's been, you know, 150, 200 years or whatever since it's created. So there's probably no DNA left to test. What our test does, it's called peptide mass fingerprinting, and it finds the collagen. Mm-hmm. So the protein, the collagen in your skin can last for like thousands of years. You could do so much to it and it still is there, but you can't get that specific. Mm. So you can get down to like, this is a member of the great ape family. Mm. So it's like,
I see.
Unless someone wrote that it was a bound in chimpanzee or something, then you can
assume that it's
thereby assume that it's a human. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you can't, like, you can't find out what the biological sex of someone was or any sort of,
gotcha.
You know, background kind gotcha. Of thing.
Yeah. Someone, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to make a very stupid joke. Someone tell my collagen that you can last for a couple hundred years. You know what I mean? Hey.
Oh, my God. Get the vampire facial like the Kardashians.
So I know that, like, obviously you've been working on this a lot, and but the words human skin leather, it is weird to hear. And you're in the Order of the Good Death, which is like about normalizing death and kind of making it, you know, mm-hmm. changing how we look at it in society. But, you know, reading parts of this book, it's just crazy to be like the pores set, you know, just reading it in that way. It's just wild. Like, is there anything that like really got to you when you were doing this that like really freaked you out?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so there are like, I was vegan for like 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm running around, like, I go to an actual leather tannery having, like,
oh, wow.
After having been vegan for like a oh, super long time.
Oh, my God.
And so, like, yeah. Also, it was July. Ooh. Also, like, just like add all the like gross, like, yeah. But, you know, it's, part of the whole like thing of the book is that you can get used to things. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly easily. And that's like part of what goes on with the doctors, where they are like, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm like throwing organs in a bucket here, I'll just save this for later. They don't see it as a big deal, whereas all of us are like, you're a serial killer. Like like your mind goes to this other place.
Totally.
Because you can get used to things like so surprisingly like fast. Mm-hmm. Right. And so yeah, it's like, yeah, that leather tannery thing, it was I was trying to find out who, like, what it's like, what it would have been like to actually take someone's skin and make it into leather, mm-hmm. right? Because even when you, you know, do that with animals, like, they don't make leather the same way that they used to make it. Almost nowhere in the U.S. does that anymore, except this one place in New York. So it was seriously like the first 20 minutes of a horror movie. I was like driving by myself into the woods to meet like a strange man in his leather tannery. It was just like so ridiculous. I was like, am I gonna get murdered? This is like really,
I think he thinks you're gonna murder him if you're showing up with these questions.
Just out of curiosity, how do you make skin leather? Just out of curiosity.
It's like, walk me through this, okay? But the way I found him was I was asking like leather artisans and stuff online, like, okay, like how do you actually make it? And this one guy told me, yeah, I did this workshop up at this place in New York. And he's like, yeah, you know, they made us, I was like, well, what was it like? Like, tell me more about it. He's like, oh, they made us wear these big like hip wader boots. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Well, this is like, you know, why would I have to wear this? And he's like, and then the dude opened this drum and just like all this like stuff came out. And he's like, oof. Yeah, and it was so gross. And he was like, I literally saw, like, I'm pretty sure it was goat balls, like, float by my feet.
God. Oh, man.
Woo! And I was like, you know what? I was like, you know, I hate to be like this, Kevin, on the phone with like a stranger. I was like, but I think I need to go see these goat balls for myself. Like, I don't think I can write this book.
It's like, without...
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I couldn't write this book without actually like experiencing how gross the thing is. Like, it's so easy if you're just talking about leather, like you're talking about a leather shoe or leather whatever. Like, you don't think about what actually you have to do to make it. And that's what I really wanted to like do. So yeah, I went up there and the guy was so nice and he knew so much like amazing historical stuff that like really helped me out. And then he was like showing me the different machines in the place and how it works and stuff. And I walk in and it's just like, there's like a pile of like hairy, like, you know, like animals.
Like pelts
and I'm just like, yeah. And I was like, oh, this isn't that bad actually. I don't like see what the big deal is. And I turned the other side and then this like smell like hit me in the face. And like, it literally almost like knocked me off my feet. I was just like, oh my God, this smells so bad. Yeah. And I was like, it was like, it's so almost like indescribable how disgusting it was. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, yeah, walking me around. And I like was wearing Keds.
Too. Oh my God.
Like, I was just wearing like these little like Keds.
those are gone now.
Yeah, I had to throw them in the literal garbage like after I left because the stuff that was on the ground was like,
oh yeah,
it was so disgusting. And I had a rental car and I was like going to drive home and it was like, like the smells hitting me in the face. I was like, I'm not going to get that deposit back, yo. I got to throw these in the trash. Just like, boop, my Keds.
Drive home barefoot, buy some flip-flops at Rite Aid. Yeah. Not worth it. Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. I was so glad I had some flip-flops in my bag.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I would have had to drive from New York to Philly, like, barefoot.
You know, is a great PSA for keeping flip-flops in your bag.
Absolutely.
Most of the time, I think they're in those overnight hoe bags, but they can be used for many purposes.
I miss my hoe bag.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back, everybody.
Hey, welcome back to Lady, I'm Brandy.
I'm Babs.
I'm Tess.
And we're here with Megan Rosenbloom.
Hi.
And we're going to ask you a few questions. Halloween time / I mean, your book.
Yeah. Yeah.
/ your life.
/ your life.
Do you love Halloween, Megan? Is it your favorite holiday?
I do. And because this year is so weird and we're in quarantine and you know, I've got a 3-year-old and she's like finally able to like super get into it. I was like, this sucks, man. And I was like, how can I do this? Especially because I'll be busy like promoting the book. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, you know what? I have a fake like white Christmas tree and unsurprisingly, I have a lot of spooky ornaments already on my Christmas tree. So I ordered some orange lights and I put up a Halloween tree.
Oh, that's fun.
I love that.
I did that on Labor Day. It's been up the whole time. And like, so I just always try to find like fun books for us to read that are spooky and kind of, you know, just have fun making, you know, pumpkin shit and whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
That's adorable. Yeah,
so like there's no trick-or-treat. What are people doing aside from trick-or-treating this year? Like anything? There's gotta be some workaround.
I have some friends with kids who like the people that are in their, you know, immediate pod that they're playing with are doing like haunted houses in their backyards for those kids and like handing out candy to like
that's a good idea.
You know, I think there's some like
drive-through pumpkin stuff that I saw like a list of last night too. A couple different spots that have just like light up things you can go drive through.
I'm worried, like, what if people come to our door? I tried to make it as inhospitable as possible. I put like, it's still all spooky, but I put masks on the witches and the skeletons and stuff. Yeah. Like, don't come up here with your, you know.
Well, like, aw, that's really funny. Like, I want to decorate for Halloween, but I don't
but
want
please.
You to.
Like, do not come into my domain.
I guess you could just put a thing of candy.
Yeah, that's probably what I'll do.
Comes up there.
Oh, I found out I was at Target yesterday and I saw a sign that said, make Halloween fun for all. A teal pumpkin by your door lets trick-or-treaters know you have allergy-free treats. Find out more about the Teal Pumpkin Project at foodallergy.org.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen this for a few years.
I'd never heard of that before.
You can put out a teal pumpkin if you have treats that are like for kids, that, like non-food treats, basically.
Yeah. Anyway, that was like blew my mind. I was like, what?
I will say... This is
color-coded pumpkins.
A month and a half ago, I heard an ad on the radio for a drive-through Elf on the Shelf, and that was the moment where I was like, "We have collectively lost our fucking minds." It is August.
I don't understand how that works.
I don't know.
Is this a horror movie?
It sounds like a horror movie. A drive-through Elf on the Shelf, and I was like, "It's August. What is? We've lost our minds." Like
just. A never-ending Christmas.
What, I mean, Elf, how do you make that into a drive-through? It's a fucking doll.
So what is Elf on the Shelf? You're supposed to put the elf somewhere every day and the kid finds it?
Yeah, and some parents...
It normalizes fascism.
Yes.
Is what it does. Because it says, someone is always watching you,
exactly.
So you better behave.
Okay.
Or there
Isn't
will be
that
consequences.
Just being a parent, though? I thought that was...
Yeah.
Well, parents are inherently.
I will not have that... Yeah. I will not have that narc in my house.
Yeah.
Are you anti-Elf on the Shelf? I know some people with kids are very pissed about Elf on a Shelf. They hate it. They feel a lot of pressure to participate. And then like the kids that have an Elf on the Shelf house, they like are shitty to the kids that don't have an Elf on the Shelf.
Jeez.
I don't even, but what is it? If you don't find the elf every day, you get in trouble? I don't understand what the concept is.
I know that you're supposed to move it around, and like some people are like ridiculous, like they do something really crazy with it every single day, but it's supposed to be like in a different part of the house every day. I don't know how that's tied into behavior.
Yeah, it's like I think it's supposed to be watching you and you're supposed to behaving.
Okay. So since you don't know where it is, you're supposed to be good no matter what.
Something like that. It's creepy. I don't like it.
I just
it.
Feel like you found an
elf on a shelf is a cuck, it sounds like to me.
Oh, seriously. For sure.
It just wants to see.
Total cuck.
Okay. Let's get these questions. Megan, who is your favorite dead person?
Oh, man. Who's my favorite dead person?
We're not asking that typical who would you have dinner with. Because
right. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Does it have to be someone I actually know or someone who I think is
either.
Awesome?
Anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Prince. Mm.
It's a pretty good one.
Good call.
Good one.
I think he's also a good call because he'll never truly die. Like,
yeah,
he still feels alive, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a pretty good one. I like it. Cause I feel like a lot of people that like, even, authors or musicians that you love from like a long, long time ago, like you're like, if I really thought about like hanging out with you, it would suck. Like Edgar Allan Poe or somebody was actually just like a horrible drunk who was married to his cousin. And it's like, you can't talk to that guy for that long.
I mean, no. Sounds like half the people I know, but sure.
Yeah,
what
fair.
Do you? I feel like Vincent Price would be a good dead person to hang out with.
Vincent Price.
He seems
how dead is he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's dead, but he's also like, he's got style. He's a really good cook. Whoa. He's pretty funny. I feel like he would probably be
Vincent
a
Price.
Really good
is that you
phone.
Said?
Yeah.
Beautiful voice.
I love on the like the special edition of the Thriller album. Like, you can hear the outtakes of him, and it's just fucking amazing. Like, him and Michael awesome. Jackson, like, going back and forth about what to say.
Maybe, you guys, I just had an idea. Maybe we can rebrand Thriller as a Vincent Price song.
So that we go. And then we don't have to pretend to think about Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay, I like this. I thought you were going to say, like, reboot it, which is probably going to happen anyway.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. You someone's know who I would love? You know, let's get fucking Rihanna on this shit.
Ooh.
Oh, I would definitely watch a
that would be
Thriller.
So hot if she like choreographed like a whole fucking big old thing.
Yeah.
I think while we're rebranding though, we need to make sure that it's no longer Vincent Price's part of the song is no longer branded as a rap.
Oh yeah.
Because that's not a rap. I thought it was like a poem sort of.
Yeah. Branded as a
in the credits it says rap.
Oh my god.
By Vincent Price, I swear.
Oh boy.
That's how white the 80s were.
Damn.
Wow.
Just for telling everybody, Vincent Price is my favorite rapper. Love Tupac, Vincent Price, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the big guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Megan. What methods do you recommend to get a kid into Halloween? Like, is your kid like a...
I feel like she just gave us some good ones.
Yeah. We already got a couple. The tree is a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny idea for me to try to think of, you know, if I were trying to coax a kid into getting into Halloween when our house, like, you know, has just like some skulls and things around it all the time. Candy is usually a pretty good motivator, I would say.
Yeah,
that's in the general. Number one.
Yeah.
But yeah, she literally likes to dress up every day. So she's just into it. But she's not spooky like me though. Mm-hmm. She dresses up like Elsa and like My Little Pony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And stuff like that. Aww. She will, if I say like, oh, we're not going to wear a fancy dress today, she like gets upset or she thinks that a dress is not, that's not fancy enough because it doesn't have a tutu or it doesn't have sequins.
Aww.
Like, not okay. So she's not like a spooky kid. Mm-hmm. But
it's more the Halloween everyday like lifestyle mm-hmm. happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of go
Who
with it.
Who doesn't want to wear a gown every day? You know, I mean, toddlers are so lucky.
Like
they just get to be wearing gowns and wigs and barefoot all the time. I mean, that sounds great.
I love that.
I also think that kids get to stare, you know, and we don't give them shit. And like, I'm not staring to be rude. I just am taking in information, but kids get to stare.
Yeah.
Just a side thought.
Barbara's really jealous of a staring child.
I just know it was a joke I tried to write once and it never came out. So now it's coming out here.
My kid doesn't stare, but she's super verbal and says like the wildest things to people and then I have to react react. Where we tried to go to a cabin mm-hmm. to like have a little break before all the book stuff happened and stuff, and we're walking around. She'll just yell at people like, why isn't that guy wearing a mask? Or she'll tell people like, we're voting for Joe and Kamala, and I'm like and she calls the president Trumpet Donald Duck.
He actually has like strong Donald Duck vibes. Yeah, no offense to Donald
Duck.
He
does.
No, the booty for sure.
That belligerent kind of. I can't do Donald Duck, but
and he does that thing with his mouth, like
yeah,
he does.
Yeah.
This is very on
duck
point.
Lips.
Well, and his diaper
roasted.
Ass. Looks
Your kid
like a
roasted
big,
Trump.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, she roasts him every day. It is like a literal like roast here. And I don't even try to talk about him in front of her, but she'll just ask me questions about him. Like, you know, is Trumpet Donald Duck interested in lettuce? I'm like, I don't think so.
No.
Absolutely. Doubt it highly. You
know, may that one thin thing they call lettuce on a Big Mac, whatever that is.
Yeah, and even that he probably picks off.
Yeah.
So a neighbor was walking by the other day, and she just like out of nowhere, just like she couldn't control herself. She just like blurts out like, "Hey, Trumpadile Duck got the virus."
I like imagining kids calling each other on those can phones and telling
so cute.
I love that. That's amazing. Does she have a Halloween costume for this year?
Yeah, so my mom came through with the yard sale Twilight Sparkle from My Little Pony outfit. She is pretty pumped.
Nice. Good for My Little Pony for like still being around. It's kind of just ever.
And they're thriving, honestly.
They rebooted. They're good.
Did they ever
like
go back?
Yes.
Have they just been around the whole time? Or they're
They've
back?
Been around, but I think they really came back with the TV show, with like the animated show.
Yeah. Yeah, they look.
You know what the theme song? Pretty good.
Is it still My Little Pony? Is that what it is?
No, it starts with that, and then it turns into a like a bop.
Oh.
Damn, I'm gonna okay.
As the kids say, I believe. I don't know. I'm
kid's
old.
Bop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a kid's bop.
Oh, we're gonna bop on out of here. We will be back. Megan, are you down to give some advice with us in the next segment?
I love telling people what to do. So
yay!
Absolutely.
Perfect.
We'll do it.
Everybody, we're back on Lady to Lady. I'm Babs.
I'm Brandy.
I'm Tess.
And we're here with Megan.
Hi.
And just so you guys know, we are going to be doing a special episode on the first week of November. Since it's the election, we don't want to get sizzlered like the last election where we recorded an episode
at
right
Sizzler.
Before. And we were very optimistic. And then the episode came out the day after the election. And
it was a huge
say,
slap in the face to everyone. So sorry. 4 years later, we are sorry about that. We know that we upset probably a lot of you. And we were also going through hell that day. And let's hope that doesn't happen again this year.
Yes.
But just but in case.
Just in case. We also just want to hear from you guys. Because, you know, we haven't done something like this before. So we're experimenting with it. But we have a voicemail where you can call and leave us a little message. You know, tell us something, a quarantine story, a self-care fail. I don't know. You know, just let us know how you're doing, how it's going. If you've got anything you want to share with us or anything, you know, something the show has made you think about, give us a call. You can leave us a voicemail at 661-523-2423. And just give us a ring and we'll be releasing that episode the week of the election just as kind of a check in with everybody and to see how you're doing.
Yeah, you can tell us a joke or a story or whatever. Just
whatever you guys want. It's just going to be a fun little potpourri episode that will come out the day after the election and give us a little little fun time.
I like this potpourri episode. I wish that, like, instead of a bottleneck episode, I wish episodes of TV where they just have a little bit of everything is a potpourri.
Yeah.
I got that. I always think about that from Jeopardy whenever they have a topic that's kind of just like more open-ended. It's like the potpourri category. It's like,
you know,
what?
Really? That's what it is?
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I associate potpourri with poop.
Oh. Well, because it does. I think it smells like dead people. Most potpourri, I don't
I get that.
The smell of.
I think it's just been placed in enough bathrooms for me to associate it with them.
Well, yeah. No, that's what it's there for. Yeah.
Wait, did millennials kill potpourri? Because I have not seen it in a long time.
I think it's pretty gone. I think the potpourri industry.
You don't often find
hell
it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Also, I was pretty sure there is like a product called Poopery that was like a spray
we
for your bathroom.
There is.
Yeah,
we have it too. Yeah.
Oh, see, so that's why you think, that makes
and
sense
it's called,
too.
That's called Poopery. And it does.
Well, maybe Poopery killed Potpourri.
Oh, shit.
Hey.
Poopery killed the Potpourri star.
I was thinking about this the other day too, because like we, the last time I was in a mall, months ago, our mall over here in Eagle Rock has one of those like buy your grave plot kiosks.
Oh,
and I was like,
a kiosk.
Oh, yeah, kiosks. I was like, oh, millennials definitely killed graveyards, right? Like nobody has a grave plot anymore, right? That's our age.
Well, it's just that we can't afford real estate.
Exactly,
it's not so much that I think that. You know, or at least from what I can tell, is that the graveyard is back in terms of a place to hang out.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Like,
yes.
People
makes sense. Lots of space. You can socially distant.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, when you look at the Hollywood Forever is really an LA success story.
Yeah, it's definitely a good hang. I think we're just all renting, not buying, though.
Sure. I do remember that humble brag, but I was at Fred Armisen's birthday a few years ago, and a bunch of people pulled together and got him a gravesite at Hollywood Forever, and it was like a big deal. Like, it was
how would you feel about that? Because, like, you're like, well, all right, I guess I'm not making this choice.
I assume someone one of the else? People was Natasha Lyonne, who he was dating at the time. So, like, I assume she knew kind of, like, what he wanted, and then that was something that he had, like, expressed.
Just a casual, like, so, honey, like, where would you like to be buried? Yeah. Just
I also love the idea of being like, I bought you one plot.
Yeah.
This is not a two-plot situation.
No, it was a single plot.
Yeah, yeah.
Alone Forever.
Yeah. I hope he got good placement.
Yeah.
It's got to be heavy competition.
I think he did. I think that was part of the speech. I think he's pretty close to whichever Ramon is there.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think Joey.
Yeah, I imagine that's got to be like the Beverly Hills. Is that like, Megan, do you know? Is that like an expensive one?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely expensive. I mean, I think there are different parts of like their indoor, you know, kind of different, like, I forget what they're called right now, but it's like you would pull out of almost like on CSI when they pull out the drawers with dead bodies in it. They have those in the walls. I'm blanking on that. And you know, little crematory, like you can have little spots all inside. So they're definitely, but yeah, if you're near, I want to say it was Johnny Ramone. That's right by that little lake thing and whatever. It's pretty fancy.
Yeah, it's a good spot. You know, you get people wine puke on you for all of eternity while watching Romancing the Stone. That's how you want shit to go down.
It sounds like an episode of Portlandia. So poetry, really. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just because we brought up Jeopardy, it's very random that we brought it up, okay. But I wrote a note to myself the other day that said the Jeopardy thinking song or whatever, you know, the song they play on people, right?
Yeah,
I think it's too dramatic.
Is it put undue pressure on you, Barbara?
I think that the pause is too dramatic. I think
I absolutely disagree. I think the pause perfectly encapsulates that moment when the teacher is about to say pencils down and you have to finish your sentence and it's like fuck da 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 da.
That's why I hate it. It's too much. Because there's still time. So I'm sitting here writing. I don't need the pause to distract me. I'm just saying, if I ever get on there, I'm giving them a note. Your song is too
intense. It'll be welcomed with wide arms.
Trebek, I know you're listening. Get Barbara on there. She's got words. Yeah.
I don't want to actually participate. I just have notes. Yeah. Let's do a lady problem. If you have one, send them to us at ladytoladycomedy@gmail.com.
Lady problems. Lady problems. Lady problems, do you have them? Lady problems, do you have them? People have them.
Okay, here we go. Hey, ladies, I've got a bit of a doozy this time. I work in an essential job, meaning that more or less we've stayed open during the entirety of quarantine. Due to the nature of my job, there's a decent bit of being physically around the rest of my staff, which is going to be an important detail later. Some background. I have this one coworker who's literally the worst. Lazy, uncooperative, confrontational, sexist, the whole shebang. Things started off bad between the two of us a couple months ago when I made a controversial call while my boss was out of contact and he more or less called me a bitch in our group conversation that includes my boss. The exact wording was, sorry you feel that way, maybe this isn't the place for you. This is BS, who puts you in charge if you can't handle the business. So yeah, not a great workplace relationship. Comments. I finally had enough of all the gossip and have gotten together enough information to start writing an official letter of complaint since we don't have HR specifically in our store. This really concerns me because he's one of the other managers and the people who have been approaching me are not on our same level, so it's a total power imbalance. Plus, most of my coworkers are early 20s or so. I know what I'm doing is right, but now that I've started asking about it in the context of doing something, my coworkers have started to express the sentiment of, oh, it's not really that bad. How should I go about helping them speak up and understand that this is not okay? I don't want to just let this behavior slide when several of them have mentioned not feeling comfortable being alone with him. Love you all and appreciate your podcast every week. Furious feminist. Additional detail. I wrote in about the copy-paste apology friend a while back, and you were right. That friend ended up moving anyways, and generally things worked out, so I don't have to worry about making my friend group awkward while maintaining boundaries. So, we were good. We were right before.
Well, right before. Let's see if we can do it again. I mean, I feel like there's so much going on here, and I mean, this is so typical of these situations where it's like you have something that a lot of people know is sort of objectively inappropriate, and they take initial steps of wanting to do something about it, but then when the reality of facing possible repercussions comes up, then people start to get scared. I think this happens everywhere and often. That said, I do think you're very smart to be doing everything in writing. That's your only option right now. Absolutely everything regarding this has to be in situations like this. It's so important to have a paper trail. But I do feel like you should move forward with this complaint. I mean, I think that this is why this shit keeps going, is because of the fear that keeps people quiet, you know? And I think as long as you know you're in the right and you're keeping everything documented, it would be very hard for them to make any kind of a case against you. I mean, really.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to figure out like what would make, you know, you and everybody maybe happy coming out of this on the other end. Is this a thing where this guy gets fired? Is this a thing where he has to take a class of some kind? Is this like a strike situation? Like what is like the outcome that will, you know, kind of come out of writing something like this?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he's got to get fired. He seems like he's like, And I hope that's the outcome, because that's, I don't know, when someone makes a workplace uncomfortable for people, I just have very little confidence in the ability of a class or some kind of training session to.
I do for sure too. I mean, I think that's like the best thing. I'm just like wondering in terms of like, if there's any precedent of like anything like this happening before, or like.
Right. Yeah. If like do they have anything where they give somebody a warning or something like that? I mean, it sounds like this guy doesn't need a warning. He just needs to fuck off. But I would maybe write. So it says that you've gathered enough things to write an official letter of complaint. Mm-hmm. I would write the letter and then just say like, you know, gather the people who have experienced it and say like, look, this is a real problem. Like, I know you guys don't want to go against him, but you know, we all know he's making us uncomfortable and it's not right. And like, would you sign this? And maybe if you do the work for them and just have to have them sign it, they'll, you know, do it.
Yeah. I would also, honestly, you say a lot, like he makes customers uncomfortable too. I would also maybe lead with the customer part, because unfortunately it's a business and like that affects they're going to be more concerned about their bottom line than their workers. I mean, most jobs are going to be like that. So if he's taking money out of their pockets because people don't want to come back because he's making them uncomfortable, I mean, I think that's maybe the stronger
point
to lead with.
If this is a resource that's available to you at all, I mean, I don't know if you happen to belong to some sort of a union or something like that. Or even if you have a friend that's a lawyer or something, I almost think that might be worth seeing a lawyer, having a lawyer. If you have that resource available to you, I would have the lawyer be the one to actually send this letter. Anything that just shows them you're not fucking around and you're creating a record of what's going on.
And I think it's really, so really the onus here is like on the boss, right? Because I've taken a million of these sort of training things. We have to do them every year when you work for a big university that obviously has an HR unlike this place. But in terms of the law, you need to, a boss is the person that you are supposed to go to with something like this. It is literally illegal for them to retaliate against you in any way. And you know, saying also, I think it's important to say it's multiple people who are reporting these things. You don't even necessarily have to say who, but you're showing a pattern of behavior that's really important because, yeah, it has to. It also, it's not just harassment, which is illegal, but it's also if you create, if it's a persistent situation where things keep happening, that's also like a toxic work environment. So there, you've got multiple issues going there that it's the boss's like job to address. And if something happened to the complainer instead of the person being complained about, you would definitely, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but that is like generally when people get sued is when somebody does something like that. So it sucks though, because you have to be brave to be like, you have to find this bravery to call something out, because you know, it could have like a big ramification. And it's not just everyone talking about something, but you know, you could end up, you know, it could end up affecting someone's livelihood, but also like you're at work and you're doing an essential job during a pandemic.
A pandemic.
Like you do not need this on top of everything else, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just important to remember, like, hopefully it doesn't come to that, but you do have resources available to you if for some reason this is handled incorrectly by the person you're reporting it to.
And I mean, I understand why your younger coworkers are probably being skittish around this, because you know, it's hard to find a job right now. It's a very scary time and anxious in a number of different ways. But I'll say this, like when I was in my there's like shit that like happened to me in my 20s that in the moment I didn't even recognize it as like a sexist shitty thing. And it wasn't until later, like literally even years later sometimes, that I was like, oh, that was fucked up. So if they're like recognizing stuff like immediately in the moment at that age, like it's bad. It's
really
bad.
Yeah, and to the point that customers are being exposed to it, like it must be really flagrant.
Yeah.
And also they must trust you. They trust you because they came to you. So like, although it's hard to be the one to do this, it's like they came to you for a reason. They must trust and respect you. So, you know, try if that helps at all to like give you the, you know, the courage to do a hard thing, then hopefully it does.
One of our listeners told us about basically, you know, complaining to the management about like the office protocols calls not being super
strict around COVID,
as up to as high as they should be for everyone coming back into the office. And he did it, and you know, they changed them, and a lot of people told him in the office like, thank you, we think you're the reason that this happened. So it is really hard to be the person that sticks your neck out there, but people will be grateful to you for it, and it's worth it.
Nothing gets changed if no one sticks their neck out. This shit just persists. And I mean, just maybe it's helpful to think of it that way too. Is like, I know it's scary, but then think about what you could be preventing by calling this out. And the sort of like, this is, could be a very positive, it is a very positive thing that you're doing.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like, so a lot of the coworkers that are speaking up are like a lower level. And it sounds like she's like a manager or assistant manager. So she's on the same level as him. I wonder if there's any other managers besides just you two that like you trust to have this conversation with, to like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I would put even those conversations on email though. Cause this is where I think it's really
As much in writing as possible at this point. Yeah, absolutely.
But it sounds like you have all the ammo. It's just really about like taking the next steps and doing that in the, you know, smartest way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I'm wondering this whole like, when if like you made some call while your boss is out of contact, so you like stepped up and like, you know, handled something, like how did your boss react to that? Like, were they, I'm just curious, like which way they kind of fell on that versus not, like,
yeah, it sounds like sounds her boss, like,
yeah, exactly.
But she just needs to make it clear.
I know, unfortunately.
She needs to make it clear that, I mean, unfortunately, maybe if this is the type of person that only cares about their own neck and their own bottom line, she needs to make it clear that this person is creating a situation where they are legally liable. And maybe that's all they care about is the potential not to get sued. So just make it abundantly clear that they might be getting sued soon if they don't do something about this.
No, yeah. I think it's very good to approach it because it's true. And it's just like, he's liability in many, many ways. And do you want this person working for you or not? You know, that sucks. I'm sorry. I mean, it's hard enough to, you know, be out there and like be in a vulnerable place right now during this pandemic and then dealing with this on top of it. That's a nightmare. Yeah. So you're strong. You got this, I think. You just got to, you know, gather everything you go for it and let us know how it goes.
Yeah, please follow up on that. And if you have, if like going through it, like it gives you any like tips or like you learned anything from it, like please tell us, because unfortunately you're not the only person that goes through this kind of thing. So hearing from people that have is I think really important too. If if he's a real piece of shit, we can turn him into a book.
I know a guy.
Oh, we know how to do
that. Yeah, Megan knows a guy.
Megan, so tell everybody where they can get your book. It's out on October 20th and where everyone can find
you. Yeah, so the book is Dark Archives, A Librarian's Investigation into the Science and History of Books Bound in Human Skin. It's out on FSG, so you can get it everywhere books are sold. If you order, so I have a special link. If you go to my website, which is meganrosenblum.com, then on there I have some links to various things. But if you are in the United States and you pre-order from Skylight Books in LA, you get like a super cool bespoke book plate kind of thing that's cool. Signed. I have it right here if you want to check it out. My friend.
Yeah, let me see.
Oh, cool. Skylight's an amazing bookstore in LA. So, yeah, if you can buy it from there. Oh, awesome.
So that's really cool.
My friend Landis Blair from the Order of the Good Death drew this, and it's all like crosshatched Edward Gorey style. I asked him, I was like, can you give me like goth Nancy Drew?
Yes,
that's exactly what that is. Wow.
I think you really nailed it. So these are like, you know, limited edition. You can get them from Skylight if you order or pre-order from there. For me, I'm at Library at Night on Instagram and Twitter, and I don't like to talk to people on Facebook generally.
That's valid.
Yeah. I'm
accurate.
I'm that's on there, rule. But like, you know, I literally have on my profile like, please don't message me here. Like, please don't. And yeah, I just you know, my family's far away, so they want to see the kid pictures and all that stuff, and so I'm still going to be on there for a while, but it's not my jam. I'm more of a Twitter.
We're all begrudgingly.
Yeah,
if
no
we're
one
on
is
Facebook,
so
it's begrudgingly.
Either.
Yeah.
So.
No one
absolutely.
That we know. Absolutely.
Well, they're out of necessity,
yeah,
unfortunately.
For sure.
Well, thank you so much for doing the show, and congrats on the book. It's
thank
beautiful.
You.
And thank you for
coming
on.
Thank you so much, everyone.
All right, everybody.
Yeah, we're going to go over and do Top Secret. If you want to check out what that is, go to patreon.com/ladytolady.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Can't get enough of us? Subscribe to our Patreon for exclusive bonus content, access to our first 100 episodes, and more. Go to patreon.com/ladytolady now to sign up. As little as a dollar a month keeps a roof over the glam cave and keeps you laughing, even when your coworkers stare. That's patreon.com/ladytolady.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Lady to Lady Comedy. Join our Facebook group, Lady to Lady Podcasts, to chat with other fans about episodes or even post your own lady problems. Check out our website, ladytoladycomedy.com, for show notes, videos, and merch.
And duh, follow our individual accounts, Babs Gray, Brandazzle, and Testify Barker for jokes and info and where you can see us perform live. And if you want to send us snacks, stickers, or a lock of your own hair, I don't know, whatever, our P.O. Box is 412-794 Los Angeles, California, 90041. And please, leave us a review in iTunes, but only if you like us.
We love you.
We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.